Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
Good morning and welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every week from 11 till 12. You've got Julian Paul live in the studio as usual. We'll be speaking to RPG later in the show. If you tune in regularly, you'll know we always do a, well, we generally always do a guest phone in. This week, and indeed whenever there are five Saturdays in the month, it's Phil Muffett from the Mexborough and Swinton Astronomical Society. This week he's going to be doing his astro clinic. That's if he gets back from his run. I think he's in Conisbrough doing an 8 kilometre run or something. Mad. He's mad. He is mad. I'm not kidding. Mind you, it's a nice sunny morning, isn't it? The end of August, Saturday the 31st of August 2024, just in case you're listening on catch up. So this astro clinic that Phil's going to do this week, all being well, is going to be talking about the wildfires that made the skies look amazing. That's to do with all the dust particles that blew over from America the other weekend. And he's going to talk about the blue moon as well. Exciting stuff. All being well, next week and indeed every first Saturday for the month, if he's up for it, Phil will be back doing his general astronomical update where he talks about club news, what's in the sky, all sorts of stuff. Might even tell you a bit more about his telescope. All exciting stuff. First up then, a very interesting one I saw in the press. Dementia is a big issue in society today. So UK regulators have approved lecanemab. I think I pronounced that correctly. It's the first drug to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. Though it's not available on the NHS yet, this is a significant step forward and is just the beginning. Initial research breakthrough made this drug possible, and with more drugs on the horizon, Alzheimer's Society say they continue to invest in groundbreaking research again and again. And they're saying it's a bit of an advert for Alzheimer's Society as well, saying together with the support of the public, we can and will change how we live with dementia. Dementia is one of the biggest issues as we age. We've got an ageing population. Mm-hmm. There's lots of reasons for that as well. So I thought that was an interesting one. Next up, another interesting story I saw in the press. £6.6 million lost on fake shopping sites. Yikes. British shoppers have lost £6.6 million to scammers since December last year after buying from fake websites, and that's according to Lloyds Bank. Fraudsters have been imitating popular websites such as House of Fraser, which I didn't think existed anymore, but there you go, and Superdrug. Fraudsters have been imitating them on social media, offering discounts on products such as clothes, perfume, to lure victims in. Shoppers are directed to a website designed to look authentic to buy the item, but often it never arrives or is different to what the customer ordered. One customer bought a Dior perfume but received a child's ring. So when buying online, be sure to check the website address is genuine. Avoid clicking through to websites from social media adverts. Instead, go into your browser and go directly to the retailer. And we were talking about this earlier. Often if you Google a site, even if it's somewhere you want to stay, you know, like a hotel or a pub, generally the web page, when you put it in the browser, if you search for that place, the web page does not give you their official website first. It gives you a whole host of other things. So be very, very careful. And Lloyds Bank is saying, if you don't recognise the web address, apply extra caution by checking online reviews of the website and consider buying from somewhere you trust instead. So when making a purchase, look out for the secure padlock symbol by your browser's address bar, which indicates the payment is safe. And if you think you've fallen victim to such a scam, first contact the retailer and ask for a refund. If it does not respond, as is often the case, or refuses to refund you, report the transaction to your bank, which can file a chargeback claim to try and reclaim the money for you. If you use a credit card for anything worth £100 or more, this means you can claim with your credit card company. So that's worth thinking about if you're doing bigger purchases. And for your credit card, you're covered. The amount up to which you could be protected if you pay by credit card is up to £30,000, but do check that with your bank. So that's 6.6 million lost on fake shopping sites. If you're on social media, you see an advert, if it's too good to be true, then it probably is, and don't click on the link in those adverts. Interesting stuff. Another story our friend Chris sent in about sun cream. Oh, Paul's not ready, is he? Oh, it's been a busy morning today, hasn't it?
It has been.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Yeah, our friend Chris sent a story in about sun cream. I think it was a mum just warning you about what you actually use.
Yes, a family dream holiday turned into a nightmare when severe sunburn left a 10-year-old boy requiring hospital treatment. Hector had been enjoying a sunshine break with his loved ones in Cape Verde when he decided he wanted to enjoy a final few hours of fun by the hotel pool before they left for the airport. His mother, Natalie, said their sun cream had run out, so they purchased an extra bottle of high-factor cream at the resort and applied that. However, shortly after leaving the pool, his back and shoulders turned bright red and huge blisters started to appear. Natalie has decided to speak about Hector's experience to warn other families going abroad about only using sun creams they know and trust. She said Hector had been sprayed from top to toe with the new sun cream before heading out before about 2 hours to splash around with friends made during holiday. She thought the sun cream was reapplied about 4 times during his time outside. It was only once they had left the hotel and arrived at the airport that it became apparent something was wrong. He started to feel tired and came very red, Natalie said. Aloe vera cream and ice wrapped in a towel helped to soothe Hector at the airport and during the flight. However, when they arrived home, things took another turn for the worse. When he took his T-shirt off, he started to blister. Two of them were about 8 centimetres and full of water. It was the most horrific sight you could see. Then he was rushed to hospital where the blisters were popped before his wounds were cleaned under general anaesthetic to prevent infection. Some sun cream, is it?
It is. So I think the warning to you, if you're heading off on holiday, is make sure you take enough sun cream with you. Take a trusted brand, you know. I did read in the press the other day that actually when they tested sun creams, don't be fooled into thinking some of the most expensive ones are better than some of the supermarket ones, because I think Aldi came up with it's basically the same ingredients. So, you know, do your homework and stick with what you know to avoid a horror story like that. Thanks to Chris for that story. And another story which is interesting, monkeypox. It's not something what we want to hear about, is it? Or Mpox for short. So this, I saw this article in the press. It's about Britain's view on the World Health Organization declaring a global health emergency over the Mpox outbreak. So different media has reported the story slightly different. So the Daily Telegraph headline, Memories of 2020, of course. The news of a virus jumping between countries and continents seemingly at will, and the declaration of an international public health emergency, is likely to bring back uncomfortable memories of early 2020 and COVID, of course. Some of the figures emerging from the African countries now battling a spiralling outbreak of the so-called clade 1 strain of monkeypox are alarming. However, experts are predicting that the outbreak will spread at a much slower pace than COVID. They also believe it's unlikely that we will see the rapid increase and ultimately millions of cases, which would constitute another global pandemic. Now, the Economist paper said the global stockpile, it said, that the priority in afflicted countries should be to vaccinate medical workers and those at high risk to try and curb the outbreak quickly. In the longer term, a global stockpile of Mpox vaccines is required, which could be deployed at the start of a future outbreak. Rich and poor countries need to work together more closely. Wealthy places have cash and medical muscle. Poor ones have local knowledge and data. Containing the spread of emerging diseases is a colossal public good. And because all countries stand to benefit, all should contribute what they can to organising a swifter, more rational response. And finally, in the Guardian, it said a threat everywhere about monkeypox or Mpox. We still haven't learned the big lesson of COVID. A disease anywhere can be a threat. Everywhere. We can't protect our own populations without working better with others. Maybe this time we will learn that before yet another virus becomes a global problem. Shock the Monkey by Peter Gabriel there, because we're talking about monkeypox or mpox. Watch this space on that. If you just tuned in, you are of course listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Talking about science in all its different forms. We should have RPG on the line.
I wish I was a spaceman, the fastest guy alive. I'd fly you round the universe in Fireball XL5. Way out in space together, conquerors of the sky. My heart would be a fireball.
Oh, Paul, what a lovely little introduction we got for you. Fireball XL5. I don't think you even talk about anything to do with that, but we thought it was good. What fun.
Yeah, oh. Excellent.
So what's caught your eye in the science news this week then, Paul?
Well, it sort of started with something on the local news front from Sheffield University, and they're about to co-lead a new £38 million centre to develop planet-friendly alternatives to animal proteins. And that can help towards a sustainable and nutritious part of our diets.
Ooh.
So the centre is going to work with over 120 partners around the world, including companies like Quorn and organisations like Food Standards Agency and the Good Food Institute. It's funded by the UKRI Biotechnology and Biological Sciences Research Council, and that's a mouthful.
Well done, Paul.
Innovate UK and its partners, and the centre aims to help the UK position itself as a leader in the agri-food industry. So researchers at the National Alternative Protein Innovation Centre, goodness me, the good ones, announced today aim to secure a continuous supply of safe, tasty, affordable and healthy proteins, which also help support net zero goals and future-proof the UK's food and animal feed security.
Wow.
So, great bit of work. Looking at alternative proteins such as cultured meat, plant proteins, insect-based proteins, and proteins made by fermentation, derived from sources other than animals. And that includes terrestrial and aquatic plants such as cereals, legumes, tubers and nuts, fungus such as mushrooms, algae such as seaweed, insects, proteins derived from biomass or precision fermentation, and cultured or lab-grown meat.
Wow.
So, kind of an interesting approach. And again, you know, Sheffield University there, getting out in the forefront of something that's a really good target.
Yeah, food, it's food security, but it's not just that, is it? It's about the environment as well, and you know.
Well, it's switching our diets to match the sort of world in a lot of respects, to stop us using the sort of production of meats, which cause lots of things like methane gas to be produced and to affect our climate, and the changes that we're seeing now are just sort of heralding that we're coming into a new era. You know, the UK quietly over the last sort of few decades has grown into a significant prime producer.
Yes.
Because of the changing climate.
Yeah,
we can actually, sort of progress with that. And things do vary, because I think the Romans started wine production in the UK as well. So it's not just everything that's on the current changes, but I think this is kind of a broad spectrum look at the food that we eat and how we can best produce it and how we can produce it sustainably without impacting so heavily on the planet.
Yeah.
So, good on you, Field University.
Indeed. Well, they're doing some great work, aren't they? And you know, they're doing all the work around unearthing the castle ruins at the minute. And you've got to remember that Sheffield was Sheffields, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. It's the River Sheaf. As well, which is a tributary of the Don. So it's quite interesting, but then again, I'm not quite sure what the status of the archaeology department is now at the university. It was going to be closed down.
Oh.
So be interesting to see what position they're in now, because they did have a good name. And I'll say, I think quite a while ago now, probably 5 years ago, something like that, they did a mock-up of what the entrance to Sheffield Castle would have looked like, sort of from information that they'd found looking at the ruins, the remnants that were in the Castle Market.
Yeah, so, it's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. I think the Ladies' Bridge, I recall, is I think it's 13th century, and that was where Sheffield started, because it was at the confluence of the rivers. And, of course, rivers meant, you know, they're important to industry that grew up, you know, in Sheffield. So I just find that a fascinating history.
Well, and that confluence was an ideal sort of strategic site for building the castle.
Indeed, yeah.
So, yeah, it's amazing. Sheffield seems to have lost a lot of its very old sort of historical buildings. We've got Bishop's House, which is around. Beechiff, the remains of Beechiff Abbey,
yeah,
and the sort of things, and you know, we preserve things like Shepherd's Wheel, which is our sort of industrial heritage, and the park up at Millhouse has got a very old site as well, but we don't have a lot of big significant sort of historic buildings, and the ones that we do have in the centre of Sheffield, like the original town hall, have not sort of fared well. But kind of an interesting change that we're seeing at the moment in Sheffield.
Indeed, but good on the universities, up there at the cutting edge.
Well, also I got a bit of news which we've been following up on foods and changing things, and I say the research that the university's undertaken, but I saw an article by Kimberly Bond in the iPaper, which is saying that it's important, the order in which we eat food.
Yes, I've been reading that, yeah.
Yeah, so no carbs before salad, eat in the right order to feel energised, with the headline in it, which I thought, oh, that's interesting. So they're saying that healthy eating is being drummed into us all the time, but not always. I mean, we can try our 5 portions of fruit and veg and opt for the various sort of types of food that are being recommended. But she's saying in this article, can something as simple as opting to eat protein before starting on carbs have such an impact on our gut health, which again is a thing that we've constantly sort of talked about and come back to. So the specific order of food consumption might seem like a small detail. It can have significant health benefits. So she said, think about eating fibre with carbs. So if you want to mitigate the effects of foods with higher glycemic index, the carbs, then if you eat those with fibre, it helps to slow everything down, and it'll combine eating these foods alongside following a high fibre source, as well as the protein, will aid with digestion and also slow down the blood sugar release.
Ooh.
So again, lots of problems with diabetes, so it's kind of an interesting thing to look into. But also things like eating rich, iron-rich vegetables with vitamin C. So if we're eating kale or those kind of vegetables that have got a lot of iron in, it's one of the things that you recommended to do, kale, chickpeas, but to take that alongside vitamin C, like oranges, potatoes or peppers, that can enhance significantly the absorption of the type of iron found in the foods. It also goes on to say, avoid tea or coffee with certain foods. So drinking tea or coffee alongside these foods will reduce the absorption of iron, and also especially from the non-animal sources. So foods rich in calcium will compete with iron to be absorbed, so iron-rich foods should be eaten separately.
Oh.
So that's an interesting one, and I think that cakes last. a 2020 study apparently said that consuming protein and fat first, followed by vegetables, salad fibre, and lastly the carbohydrate, increases the release of the appetite-suppressing hormone known as GLP-1 from the gut. That increases the insulin release and delays gastric emptying, leading to an overall reduced food intake as a person may feel fuller quicker.
Do you know, it's so fascinating stuff, and it's also what works for you, isn't it? If you try that and you think, do you know what, it works, this, it's simple, yeah. Isn't it? Simple.
Yeah, I think it is, but I mean, they're things which you don't often hear sort of run out. So I found it very interesting that I think they finish up on saying that dessert straight after your main meal. If you're going to eat sweet foods, this should be shortly following a main meal. So, you know, going for that pud that you're tempted to is probably the right thing to do.
In moderation, right, Paul, in moderation. So are you following all this then, you and Jan?
Well, something I've read. So we are trying to sort of change our diet around a bit. So we'll see what the result is. But at the moment, I'm having to buy bigger trousers. So
you're having to buy bigger? No, Paul, oh. That's the wrong way round. But no, yeah.
maybe that was a fib.
Yeah, but it is all interesting stuff. When you talk about diabetes, that's a big issue in society now.
But and the sort of impacts on the health service. The demand it puts on. So. I think the whole thing about the sort of processed foods that we've been eating really, really does need to stay under this microscope and to really sort of inform people about things. And I say just those things, the ways of combining the food that you eat can have significant impacts. So interesting.
And changes to diet, if you do change your diet, you know, a lot of people get caught on, you go to the doctors, they do, you know, a health check and they're looking for diabetes and all sorts of cholesterol and stuff. If you change your diet, we know quite a lot of people who've changed their diets and those being, they're like pre-diabetic almost, and they're fine now.
Yeah, there's quite a few reports of people who've sort of managed to suppress the sort of symptoms and sort of stave off the diabetes by diet changes. So I think it's a great, interesting subject and one which hopefully will get more. I mean, we keep trying to put out the message about the changes in food. Hopefully that will help people to investigate and maybe find the right kind of changes for them.
Yeah.
But, I think the other thing that we kind of need these days is a bit of hope, isn't it, to take you forward. So I was pleased to read that the green shoots of recovery are being seen from the tree that was felled at Sycamore Gap.
Yes.
So I think it's nice to see that actually where the stump is, there's some new growth, but also they've taken cuttings and seeds which are being germinated and grown as well. So from that horrible thing, a lot of us were shocked by that. It was such an iconic sort of place and symbol there. And I don't think we've still got to a resolution. I know a couple of men have been charged with cutting the tree down, but I'm not quite sure whether the trial's progressed. But this is better news. We don't want to particularly chase and look for retribution. It's far nicer to see that potentially it's starting to grow back itself, but also there are some insurances against what it's going to happen in the future. So a bit of good news on that. And also, looking at the planet and what we can do. I mean, we've talked about the seed banks that are in various places around the world. There's now a sort of proposal to build a lunar ark on the moon. So to take frozen samples of endangered animals and plants and store them up on the moon, just in case we make a total hash of the planet.
Dr. Doom.
Oh, I thought we were having hope, Paul. Hope. Brilliant. Okay, excellent stuff as always, Paul. We shall speak to you on Monday. Glory Days Rock Show, 1 till 3.
Look forward to it.
Oh, exciting stuff. Thank bye-bye, you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Bye. Cheers. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Of your precious love, satisfy my soul. Many lies about it, some of them cries about it, some of them dies about it. Everything's a fighting about the school.
Bit of Cream there, very old Cream from the album Strange Brew. That was Spoonful, because RPG was talking about the order of food you eat, amongst other things. If you've just tuned in, you're of course listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Before we speak to our Phil, we've just got a bit of an environment update for you. First up, chocolate. This is a really interesting one.
Yes, food scientists in Switzerland have come up with a way to make chocolate using the entire cocoa fruit rather than just the beans, and without using sugar. The chocolate developed at Zurich's prestigious Federal Institute of Technology includes the cocoa fruit pulp, the juice and the husk or endocarp. The process has already attracted the attention of sustainable food companies. Traditional chocolate production using only the beans involves leaving the rest of the cocoa fruit the size of a pumpkin and full of nutritious value to rot in the fields. The key to the new chocolate lies in its very sweet juice, which tastes very fruity, a bit like pineapple. This juice, which is 14% sugar, is distilled down to form a highly concentrated syrup combined with the pulp and then mixed with the dry husk or endocarp to form a very sweet cocoa gel. The gel, when added to the cocoa beans to make chocolate, eliminates the need for sugar.
Watch this space. Next up, hungry. Train travel. A new seasonal European sleeper train route has been announced, connecting 9 cities across 5 countries during peak tourism months. European Sleeper, which runs services in Belgium, Germany and the Czech Republic, said the route would operate during February and March to accommodate winter sports travel and take passengers through Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany and Austria before ending in Italy.
Next, solar surge. The Australian government has given the green light to plans for a 10 billion solar farm in the country's Northern Territory, in which what has been labelled as the country's biggest renewable energy project ever. The project will supply Darwin, the capital city of the Northern Territory, as well as parts of Singapore via a 4,300-kilometre network of undersea cables.
And Australia isn't the only country making strides in solar power. The latest forecasts show that the UK is set to generate record levels of solar power this summer, with output reaching 16% more than the previous summer record from 2022. This comes despite the country experiencing a distinctly damp few months, as solar panels do not need direct sunlight to operate.
Offshore wind. This is an interesting
one. It is an interesting one.
The Crown Estate is at the forefront of Britain's green revolution. This ancient institution, which manages £15.5 billion of the monarchy's assets and holds rights to renewable energy in the seas around England, Wales and Northern Ireland, is about to be given new investment powers to turbocharge offshore wind.
Yeah, I like the holds rights to renewable energy in the seas around England, Wales and Northern Ireland. It's very interesting. Recycling, this is another interesting one. Civil servants have been travelling across Europe this summer on fact-finding missions to revamp British recycling with a particular focus on the best systems on which to model the long-delayed bottle return scheme. If you're old, enough, like us, you'll remember that.
Yeah, you used to
getting money back.
You used to get 5 or 10p, didn't you, for a bottle?
Exciting.
Wildfires. The government is to appoint Britain's first wildfire czar to help tackle the growing threat of blazes linked to extreme weather and climate change. The National Resilience Wildfire Advisor will be tasked with assessing what additional national capabilities might be needed to increase resilience to the wildfire risk and ensure coordination across the sector.
And finally, in our environment update, music festivals. Each year, outdoor music events in the UK burn 12 million litres of diesel.
Shocking.
Last weekend, though, the peak of the festival calendar, and that was no different at that, but at Reading and Leeds, Creamfields and Notting Hill Carnival, thousands of generators puffed away to power the amps, lights, food stalls and bars as revellers enjoyed the last of the summer. In a field on the edge of Bristol, however, there was not a diesel generator to be seen as 34,000 music lovers arrived on Sunday. Trip-hop pioneers Massive Attack, playing their first hometown gig in 5 years, had organised what nobody in the industry thought possible, a green music festival. The event was powered with batteries provided by Ecotricity. Extra trains were chartered to get punters to Bristol, and when they got there, electric buses shuttled them to the gig. All the food on site was vegan, and the toilets were composting versions. So it can be done. Well done, Bristol, and Massive Attack.
A little seed and put it in the ground.
track there by the Darling Buds. If you've not heard that band before, a track called Evergreen, because we're talking about music festivals and Massive Attack playing Bristol, and everything was very green. Well done to them. If you just tuned in, you're, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms. Our guest speaker has finally returned from his run. He's a bit tired. He didn't have any breakfast before he went. But it is Phil Muffett from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society, of course. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
I don't know if you could hear that intro, but it's a new one we've got for you.
No, I didn't hear it.
Oh,
I
well.
I can't hear it on the phone.
Space Trucking there by Deep Purple.
Oh, lovely.
Have you never heard that track?
I don't think I have.
Well, I think it suits you right down to the ground, Dan.
I'll have to look it up.
You'll have to look it up. So, for people who don't know who you are, how could they not? You are from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society, of course.
Yes, going strong as well.
You are going very strong, aren't you? You've got a great website as well. So well done to everybody who looks after your website.
We've got some great members that have a lot of input into it.
msas.org.uk, worth checking that out. And if you follow on Facebook, Twitter, some of the images get put up. Mick Nichols has been putting some fantastic ones up, hasn't he?
He has.
You all have. You all have.
The sun's been really interesting recently. There's been lots and lots of sunspots.
Yeah.
And I think there was another aurora last night. I think you'd have been very lucky to see it. I did have a look last night, but it was a strange one last night because it looked clear, but for some reason it wasn't clear. So I don't know. One of the indicators is looking at the Ursa Minor. So you can look at the pole star and then see Ursa Minor spiral off it from its tail. And depending on how many stars you can see in Ursa Minor, or the small plough, it gives you an indication of how good the seeing is. So while it looked clear and you could see stars, there was something in the atmosphere that was making it not very seeable.
Oh, but you don't know what?
Well, I don't. It was kind of misty, but I don't think it was mist.
Uh-huh.
So it might have been some really, really thin high cloud, but it didn't look cloudy. Like, it cleared up lovely, but then when it actually got dark, it wasn't fantastic.
Ah, well, being an astronomer, you never know what you're going to get. Nature throws things in its way.
No. So this one reason why when we can see it's going to be clear, we get his gear out.
I thought yours was permanently out. No, but actually, your telescope, you bring it out, you have to get it warmed up. Well, get cool used down to the temperature, don't you? Whatever's outside.
I've got a couple of different sizes. The big one takes about an hour to get acclimatized to the atmosphere or the temperature. And then the smaller the diameter they are, the quicker they get acclimatized. So he said they're very, very sensitive things, mirrors. And when you get them out, it's one of the reasons why I keep mine in the shed or the garage covered up, because it's more likely to be at operating temperature. If you keep your telescope in the kitchen or in the house and then you take it outside, you've got a lot longer for it to acclimatise. And you've got problems with condensation and all that kind of stuff. So, it'll not perform properly. And if you're not performing properly, it won't look good.
No, and we don't want that.
You want a nice, crisp image.
So the other weekend, the skies were the most amazing colours, and you sent me some stuff through, didn't you? You said, oh, look at all this. And you tracked it all from, well, it was coming from America. So I just wonder if you could just tell us a bit about what happened.
All right. Well, there's been a few photos on social media. In fact, last night, just after sunset, if you were looking in that direction, the sky was kind of an orangey-reddy colour. It looked really, really nice, actually. And what it is dust in the atmosphere. And as the sun goes over the horizon, the light has been refracted around the Earth and it splits the rays up into the red end of the spectrum, which is why it looks red.
Ah.
But the particles that are in the atmosphere are small particles from North America, because California and Canada have had some fires. The smoke's gone right up into the upper atmosphere and then it's been carried around the globe with the jet stream, and it's come over the over the UK. I had a look a couple of days ago, and I'm predicting the jet stream was going to kind of go over Ireland and Western Scotland, and that's why after sunset you could see the sunset was kind of right nice, romantic, red, orange, glowing horizon.
But actually, it's all the smoke from because the it's wildflowers,
muck.
Yeah, the
muck and pollution.
Yeah, I read somewhere that it's not a threat to public health because it's so high up. It just make the sky. Because everybody was like, cool. Well, are you saying it's still happening? Because it happened a few weekends ago, and they said once the weather becomes more unsettled, it'll be pushed out of the way.
Well, it's still being carried around the jet stream, and it's still up there with the jet stream going around. I suppose it'll settle out as it's going around the globe, but the dust is up there. You could definitely see it last night. If you look south, the horizon was definitely more of a natural bluey colour. But when you look west, you could definitely see the sky was a different colour, and it was partly to do, well, it was to do with the sun refracting, being refracted, the sunlight being refracted around the globe. It's one of the reasons why when we get a lunar eclipse, or you get a partial eclipse, the moon goes a red colour, and that's because the sun's rays are being refracted around the Earth, and the red end of the spectrum's hitting the moon, and it looks red.
Wow.
So it's exactly the same effect that's happening when you see the sunset. So, it's pure. It's like a prism, and the light's being split up into its different components, and we're seeing the red end of the spectrum, and that's why it's looking
red. Oh, why are we seeing the red end of the spectrum?
Because it's a refraction. The other rays are being refracted away, whereas the red end's being refracted down. So that's why we get the red end of the spectrum.
Wow. So it isn't because it's a sunset, it's picking up those colours.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's just the way a prism works. It splits the light up into different bands, and we're just getting the red band coming round.
Amazing. And then it
happens with volcanoes as well. When we have the Icelandic volcano, that's on the edge of the polar vortex. And what happened was, as the jet stream was meandering round, it was pulling the particles down over the North Sea, which is why there was all the problems with the aircraft flying across
Europe.
So now the jet stream can move further north. Now, if it moves north and west, what happens is hot air comes over the UK from Europe, and I think that's what's happening at the moment. The past couple of days, it's been really sunny and warm and hot, and that's because it's moved up north and west so that it's allowed air to come across. Now, at the beginning of the year, I think it was about March time, when I photographed Vesta, we had a week where there was really cool, still air, which was ideal for observing. And what happened is the jet stream moved south over the channel and perhaps even over north of France, and that allowed cold air to come down the Atlantic over the UK and from Norway and Sweden, came down over the UK. We had that cold spell, but it was really, really clear, and the air was really, really steady, and optical viewing was absolutely tremendous. Well, I managed to photograph Vesta, and I could actually make a shape out of it.
Wow.
So if the air was more turbulent and warmer, I wouldn't have got such good seeing conditions, but because it was cold air coming down, it's really good. So the jet stream also, if a jet stream comes across the UK, that drags in all the moisture from the Atlantic, and that's when we get the hot and cold fronts coming together, getting occlusions, and it dumps a load of rain on the UK.
Yeah.
So to be honest, so when we get lots and lots of rain, the jet stream's over the UK, and if we get warm air like we have now, it's moved north and west, it's nice and warm. If it moves south, we'll get some cold air from up north coming down over the UK. So it's a real, real important player in weather patterns across the UK.
Have you ever thought about being a weather weather promoter, forecaster, weatherman?
I keep an eye on it. I'm on YouTube. the BBC do a long-range weather forecast. It's more interesting than it is on the TV because they tell you more detail. And it also tells you trending and gives you forecast like a month in advance. So if you're interested in the weather and what it's going to be like in advance, or proper in advance, they can do like a long-range weather forecasting, which is really interesting. Because you can plan yourself. Well, it's like when I'm doing, like last night, I imaged the asteroid Iris, which is in Capricorn. So the sky is moving around now. We're going from summer into autumn. We're transitioning now. So I'm picking up some new constellations, and in Aquarius and Capricorn is just moving around into my southerly window. So I've got a transit area where I can see really low down. And I just picked up a brand new asteroid called Iris, which is the seventh on the asteroid list. And I think it's the fourth brightest one in the sky. So I found it using setting circles. So I used like RA and declination to work out where it was.
Clever.
And anyway, I managed to photograph it. So it's a little project I've had this year. I've done it before, and I've been trying to use my telescope to see.
I was going to say, this has all started with a significant birthday and that telescope.
Yes. So it's been a bit of a new project, something I've not looked at before. I mean, there's that much you can do in astronomy. You can like kind of do a certain topic like galaxies and nebulae, planetary stuff. There's the moon, and then but there's all kinds of other things, comets, astro. There's all kinds of things.
But you also talk about the weather and the jet streams and what an influence they are on our country, because of where our country is, and we're right next to the Atlantic. I mean, I know Paul sat next to me. You must use that same long range.
I read the long range one, the text, but not actually watch the YouTube channel.
Do you think it's better to watch the YouTube then, Phil, to see it come?
Well, the thing is, the YouTube, I can watch it when I want, and the other thing is you can replay it and watch it again. So the YouTube one's okay because I can be sat in bed in the morning or go to bed in the evening and look at YouTube and replay videos.
What a life you lead, Phil. Yeah. How do you find time to go to work and all that? I bet Karamia regrets ever buying you that telescope.
My wife's out all day today. She's at the boat club. She's just becoming a lifeguard. She's helping out with the water sports that's going on the lake today.
Wow. Well, that's worth giving a shout out to Manvers Waterfront Boat Club. MWBC.org.uk. It's an amazing place, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The water temperature's dropped to 18 degrees. So in a week, it has gone down 5 degrees.
That's a lot.
So but the other thing is talk about global warming and stuff. It's been really interesting on the lake today. I thought it was going to be really, really hot this year in the summer. Now, 2 years ago, it hit 25.1 degrees, which is a record for Mampers. But this year, it's only got up to 22.
Oh.
But what's been strange is it was really, really hot at Easter. We had a really, really big hot spell and we broke all the records at Easter. And then it's kind of petered. It's still got warmer, but it's petered off. So the maximum hasn't gone up during the summer. And it's just started to go over the other side of the temperature lump.
It's a bitter, it's a bitter edge, isn't it?
I don't know if overall we're going to have a hotter year this year. It started off hot.
Yeah.
It's kind of gone back normal towards the summer. But there's definitely changes in the atmosphere. Well, with all these fires that's going off, where they've had them in Greece and they've had them in North America.
Indeed,
The thing is, these fires are natural occurrences. The problem is it's occurring more and more often.
Yeah.
And then there was a tornado that hit the sea down in the Mediterranean where they sunk that ship.
Yes.
That's another freak weather event.
That's quite a story, that.
Yeah. These extreme weather events are happening more often, which is what we were predicting 20, 30 years ago, that if the climate gets hotter, we will get hotter spells, colder spells, and there'll be more violence, and that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it a double-edged sword? You're going into autumn, which is you're getting much better conditions for viewing the night sky, as you always say. You know, you're waiting for autumn.
Cool.
Yeah, but actually the water's colder at Manvers, so you can't have it all, Phil, can you? But just before you go, can you tell us about the blue moon? Because that came pretty soon after the first images of the skies changing colour because of the dust clouds coming over from America.
Yeah. Well, the blue moon was actually a red moon.
Oh, was
that,
it?
When I said they were calling it a blue moon, but when you looked at it, it looked red. Because, and that was the other week, that was all part of the fires from North America. So like the other week, the jet stream was south of the UK. So all the red air was, all the refraction was down in the southern part of the sky. So the moon, when it was low down, when it got to full, it was near the bottom of the ecliptic in Sagittarius. So the moon was only about 12, 15 degrees above the horizon. So you were getting that refracted light in the atmosphere. It was a really, really warm orangey-red colour. Now, it's kind of jet streams move north of the UK. We're getting the sunsets that's really, really red. So it's moved about, and you can tell this by looking at the objects in the sky. But anyway, the reasons why it's a blue moon is, originally, because the sky split up to 360 degrees, and the moon takes 29 and a half days to go from full to full, what happens is about every 33 full moons, we get two in a month. So this is where the term people do things once in a blue moon, because it's about every 2.7 years before it happens where we get two full moons in 1 month.
Wow.
So that's where the saying comes from.
Well,
so anyway,
you will learn all sorts on this show. Yeah. I'm telling you.
Yeah. So So what happened was, you normally get three full moons in a season, which is 3 months, right? So you've got your spring, your summer, your autumn, and your winter. You'll get three full moons. When you got a fourth full moon in a season, that was the original blue moon, because it's an extra moon in the month, and it only happens once in a while, so that's where the term comes from. But I don't know why they called it a blue moon. You could have called it anything, really.
Because it's not blue at all.
No, it's not blue.
We'll have a trade description act, Phil. But we don't have to cover some stuff on the show because, as you always say, astronomy covers a whole raft of different sciences, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
It's amazing. Anyway, we're going to have to let you go now so you can have a rest.
Okay, lovely talking to you.
And go and get your breakfast.
I need a shower and some lunch.
You're gonna have to feed yourself now, aren't you? Seeing as Caramir's legged it to becoming a lifeguard. But good on her, you know. Yes. What a great thing to be. She's gonna keep an eye on
good
you.
Stuff.
It is. Yeah. All being well,
says,
Phil.
Oh, she'll not rescue me.
Oh, she'd leave you, would she? What does that tell you, eh? Blimey. I forgot to ask you. Normally, next week you come and do your normal What's in the Sky and Club News. Are you still happy to come on next week and do that?
Yes, I don't think I'll be anywhere next Saturday.
Excellent. We'll speak next Saturday, Phil.
And even if I was, I'll be.
Oh, you're a star. Well, thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Phil. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Bye.